Searching for NBA playoff coverage? We've got you. The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, gives you an inside look into the world of sports. Hosted by former NBA sharpshooter and Duke legend J.J. Redick and sports writer Tommy Alter, The Old Man and the Three offers unprecedented access to the league. Tommy and J.J. discuss the NBA and interview some of the biggest names in the league, like Devin Booker and Luka Doncic. NBA final season is the perfect time to dive in, and you can listen to The Old Man and the Three wherever you get your podcasts. To hear episodes brought to you by BMW. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast, to the post-game show for the FIU-Indiana game last night. Indiana won 34-13 in exciting fashion, scoring 22 points in the fourth quarter, shutting out FIU in the final stands as well, 22-0. We're joined by co-host TJ Inman. I'm Sammy Jacobs. TJ, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. The weather is very nice here in Indiana, and there's a little bit of a cool breeze, kind of a Christmas in the air the past couple of mornings, and it made you feel like, yes, football is finally here, and that it was so nice to get to watch our Hoosiers back on the gridiron last night. A bit nervy there, for the better part of that game, but just a wonderful fourth quarter that really just leaves you to have the imagination run wild on you just a little bit with the possibilities for this team. But I don't think there can be any dispute that it was a rousing success for the defense in Tom Allen's first game as defensive coordinator.
I agree, and I wish we had that cool breeze down here. I have never been so sweaty in my entire life in the humidity. But it was a game. It was kind of a weird game. It was a good game, and
yeah,
it was beyond a rousing success for Tom Allen's defense. And we saw the videos of him on the sideline jumping up and down. And TJ, I was down on the sideline for the majority of the game, and you could hear in the huddle Tom Allen telling his team and telling his defense, hey, guys, you're playing well. You're doing well. Let's keep playing with fanatical effort, excellent tackling, and that stuff that he's – we've heard him preach since spring practice since he got here. He has all this energy, and none of it is fake. Which to me is amazing. The guy has so much energy and really, loves his guys on defense. And then they played extremely hard for him. And it was great to see, some of the fruits of their labor come into play. Two pick sixes, that hasn't happened in IU history since 1966. The first one by Richard Fant was an excellent play, 34-yard return. Made a nice move to make the quarterback miss. The second one sealed the game against it was Tigray Scales from 16 yards out, and it was a nice play. Just jumped the route and went right down the sideline as well. So, the biggest thing to me was the play of the defensive line. Coming in, the defensive line was the weakness for this Indiana team. We didn't know what they would have up front. They were missing Ralph Green last night due to suspension, but guys like Jacob Robinson, Niall Sykes stepped up. A guy, Omari Stringer, who hasn't played a lot of ball for IU, really played well last night as well. I believe he had three tackles. I'm looking at the stat sheet now. Yeah, he had three tackles. He said Nate Hoff played well with three tackles. Guys like Damian Willis played a lot. Khalil Bryant, Tony Field saved a touchdown on that first play, on that first FIU drive, forced him to kick a field goal. It looked like, I believe it was Jonnu Smith, who had an excellent game as well, had a touchdown, and Tony Fields came in and raked the ball out and just did a phenomenal job there. And that kind of, told you that the defense is here to play. Maybe in past years, they don't go after that ball. They give up on that play, and it's a touchdown. But, holding them to three on that opening drive after a few busts on an option from Marcelino Ball, who also had a terrific game. He was the third leading tackler as well.
Yep.
So a lot to be excited about on defense. But let's get to the offensive side of the ball, TJ. It was kind of slow going at first. You know, the defense accounted for 16 of the 34 Indiana points, and Indiana scored 22 points late in the game in the fourth quarter. But to me, the offense, they moved the ball well. They racked up 486 yards, and that's not including the you know, you don't get offensive yards for pick sixes. So maybe those short fields, you're looking at potentially 500 yards of offense, which is very good. But yeah, it seemed to me, and a lot of people pointed this out yesterday, every time IU would get a long first down, FIU player would go down. And I don't like criticizing guys for injuries. Look, if you're hurt, you're hurt. But it was an absurd amount of guys going down with cramps, especially as you said in your review for a team in South Florida who's used to playing in this heat. Man, a lot of guys went down for cramping. I really think that played a role in getting this offense, an up-tempo offense, going, because you know, you'd get a 12-yard run, and then you couldn't go up-tempo and push it a little bit. And it kind of got Indiana out of whack. You know, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, you also saw Richard Legault come on the field. He played it. I thought he played a very good game. He was a little amped up at the beginning. You saw him overthrow some balls by a lot. But he led two touchdown drives late in the fourth quarter. To give the Hoosiers the lead and to pad that lead, and that's something that Indiana needs. So what's your take on the offense?
Well, I think that you know, your point about the injuries or cramping or, you know, diving, whatever it ended up being, there were definitely some legitimate injuries, and then there were some that, you know, I mean, you see the guy kind of half-stretching, and he walks off the field, and he's back the next play. It's like, okay, really? But what that does is it really kept the game from getting any kind of rhythm. And I do not think that was the entirety of Indiana's offensive woes. Something that does need to be pointed out is that Indiana had multiple times inside of Florida National Territory, and drives would stall out because of false starts, particularly on third down. I think they had three false starts on third downs, which, you know, puts you from third and short or third medium into third and long situations. You can't have that in a game that is against a better opposition. So that's a minor for sure. I'm not real concerned about that, though. It's not something that Indiana has a history of.
Yeah, those are fixable issues. First game jitters,
yeah.
Maybe. I mean, you're starting a true freshman at tackle in Coy Kronk. And it's first game jitters. You're in a new environment. You have a new quarterback, a new, I don't know if it's a new snap count, but you have a new voice calling it. And so maybe some of those false start penalties are because of that. To me, the PA guy, every time it was on third down, as Legault is calling the play, is yelling third down. And you know, to me, if I was the quarterback, maybe that would annoy me a little bit or whatever. But you know, those penalties are fixable. It wasn't a scheme issue that bogged them down. But they have to fix this red zone. These scoring zone opportunities. They were inside the 10 three times. They got a touchdown and a field goal out of it and a missed field goal. You just can't do that. And as good as Griffin Oaks is, he missed a 22-yarder, 26-yarder last night. And to me, you can't do that. You're the best kicker in the Big Ten. You can't miss these chip shot field goals. And we'll see. And then you had another missed field goal attempt that wasn't on Oaks, but, you know, you saw Mitchell Page mishandle a snap, drop the snap.
Yep.
That took points potentially off the board. So you really got to – they really – you know, in the end, it turned out well that the defense carried them. But when you start playing opponents in the Big Ten, playing Ohio States and Michigans and Michigan States, you got to get every point you could get. And, you know, special teams is a big part of that. And, TJ, a guy we forgot to mention is Devine Redding. Devine Redding, I thought had an awesome game last night. You know,
yeah.
He didn't break any huge runs, but he was very, very solid. He went for 135, a 6.1 yard per carry average, which coming into the season, I know we were both concerned about his run efficiency. He ran the ball efficiently last night on 22 carries, 135 yards, a long of only 19, but he pounded the ball. He made some guys miss, and maybe the reason he didn't break a couple of long ones is, you know, Florida International is playing that high safety to eliminate some of the big plays. But he was a guy who ran the ball well. Mike Majette's another player who ran the ball well and catching the ball out of the backfield. Majette was great. Two catches, 54 yards. He's really good on those screen passes. So talk about those guys for a little bit.
Yeah, the running back carry distribution was something we had talked about, you know, being interested in seeing. And it's not going to be the same every week, and it's going to be different once Kameon Patrick's integrated into the attack. You know, you'll see it be a little bit different maybe once Tyler Nathan is healthy and ready to go. He did not play last night. But last night, the distribution was Redding with 22, Majette with 10, plus those two catches you mentioned. Devontae Williams with 8, Cole Guest with 6. Mitchell Page had a carry on a nice play call, I thought, on a little reverse that he picked up first down on. And then Alex Rodriguez had the last carry of the game as IU was just running out the clock in the final minute. Clyde Newton did play on offense, but he did not get a carry. Featured him in a two-back set late. And it looked like he was sort of acting as a fullback almost. So that was interesting. I thought Redding, like you said, he was very solid. You know, you feel good about when he gets the ball, he's going to make something positive happen. He's going to get 5, 6, 7 yards of carry. You feel pretty good about that, and he's shown that over a long enough period of time now where it's not a fluke. I mean, this is what you can expect from Devine Redding. Now, can you expect 6.1 yards of carry against top defenses? Well, no, I mean, that's unreasonable. But can you expect that against, you know, most opponents that Indiana plays, something similar to what we saw last night from him? Yeah, I think you can. And on that, what they ruled a fumble for him, I thought it was fairly clear to me watching the replay that he was down before that ball came out. But, you know, unfortunate, it's a turnover. Indiana's only one of the night. But I was impressed overall with the way the offense responded to, you know, a pretty scary situation. And you're away, you're starting with a new quarterback that doesn't have any experience at the FBS level as a starting quarterback. And in his first game, you enter the fourth quarter down by a point. You know, that can, and you've really not seen things go right once you've had the ball in FIU territory. So it was a little bit scary for me as a viewer. I never felt like Indiana was going to lose the game, but it was right there to where, well, if they don't start making things happen, it's you know, they're in big trouble. And the offense did. They started to make things happen. It was a really nice, I think it was a 5-play drive to take the lead, followed by a touchdown that they score on a really nice call on a wheel route to Danny Friend that he was wide open on. It was wonderfully executed.
Yes.
And I it was interesting that they we saw Richard Legault keep the ball twice in kind of read option scenarios with success both times. One time he gets for a positive gain of, I don't know, 6 or 7, something like that. And then the second time down near the end zone and gets in for a touchdown without being touched.
That read option was open all day.
Yes, yeah, it was. One thing I want to mention on that is that the offensive line did a really good job, as they almost always do, of getting down the field on those plays. They do a wonderful job of blocking up the field, not just at the point of attack, but really pushing the point of attack 5 and 6 yards down the field to allow Indiana to get, you know, whoever's carrying the ball to get some good yards before they even have to worry about being touched. I mean, ESPN's broadcast did a pretty good job of showing a couple of plays of Danfini's that, and I think this is an indication that Danfini is getting the national recognition he deserves because the crews, the broadcast crews, are looking at him ahead of the game to know, okay, we need to find some highlights of this guy and show what he does on the field, and that's always a good indication of who they view the stars on the team of or are. And they showed a couple of examples last night of Danfini getting almost acting as a versatile guy that happens to play guard, but he's more than just an offensive lineman for this attack. He really blocks so well down the field. He moves so well for a guy his size. I mean, we know he's good, and last night was just another example of it. I thought that Nick Westbrook had a nice game. Simi Cobb,
yes, he did.
Into the game. Westbrook showed out well. He really took that Simi Cobb, 10 to 12 yard out route. That was the most consistent pass play that Indiana had last night. They just failed on it one time when Legault overshot it a bit, but that was nice. A couple of the concerns are going to be the finishing the drives, and then a lack of. It was interesting. I was writing out some notes to prepare for the podcast, and in my head I was thinking, didn't have really a lot of big plays. And I go back and I look at the play log, and, really, it wasn't bad. They had a run of 19 for Redding, two receptions of 28, two of 26, one of 23, and one of 21. So that's, one, two, three, five, so seven plays of 19 yards or more. None of more than 28, but and you'd like to see more, big explosive plays for sure. But, when you consider they ended up with nearly 500 yards of offense and didn't have any of those huge chunk plays, I think that that's a positive. But I guess a pessimist could look at it and say they didn't have any real big explosive plays last night. But overall, the offense was, I think, solid would be a good word to describe the offense. For the first three quarters, I'd say that they moved the ball well, but shot themselves in the foot. For the fourth quarter, they stopped shooting themselves in the foot, and I think you saw that rotation, a lot of different receivers, a lot of different blockers from running backs getting in the game through the first three quarters. You saw it really pay off in the fourth quarter on those two scoring drives, as Indiana leaned more on Divine Redding to get the drive going and then finished it with some really good play calls and good execution from Richard Legault. So it was good to see that depth pay off. And, Indiana played a ton of guys last night. They really did. It was a full team effort. And that's something that good programs have to have. You have to rely on the bulk of your roster to get wins throughout the season, because there's going to be injuries. We saw one last night with Jordan Fuchs, unfortunately, getting hurt. There's going to be suspensions. There's going to be, guys that just aren't playing very well at that particular time, or guys that their skill sets don't match up with the team you're playing. So you're going to need a lot of people. And Indiana did use a ton of bodies last night, and for the most part, I think almost everyone that was on the field had a positive impact on getting that win. It's really nice to be able to say the offense was solid but not spectacular and walk away with a 21-point victory.
Yeah, I totally agree with your assessment on that. Nick Westbrook stepped up. IU is facing some adversity. It's disappointing that Simi was suspended. We don't know the official reason yet, but he, having him step up, and they took away a lot of the passing games. You didn't see, Mitchell Page had
– no.
He didn't have a reception. He saw Devontae Williams
had one.
Oh, yeah.
Page
no, he had
one,
two for 29. He had a big 28-yard reception and another 1-yard reception.
Then he had a screen pass. Bubble screen, yeah.
Yeah. But, Westbrook, 6 for 70. Bajet, 2 for 54. Timian, 2 for 32. Page, 2 for 29. Friend, 2 for 27. Jones only had two catches for 9 yards. They took away the passing game a little bit better than we expected, because, they had two new corners. But IU ran the ball pretty well, but they have to now get the passing game going. You got to
you know, figure out a way to get, you know, hopefully Simi's back on, you know, it's a one-game suspension, so he should be back for next week's game against Ball State. But, you know, he was dealing with a hamstring injury in camp too, so they might want to hold him out. But, you know, who knows if he'll play. Does that mean Westbrook gets more time? You just become one guy deeper at that receiver position. And you got to get your playmakers the ball. And I think, you know, Lego did that, and it was good to see. Some other notes that, you know, special teams to me, it's really got to get it together. You know, you saw Joseph Gideon, first career punt was a beautiful punt. Absolutely perfect. Beautiful. You can't get any better than that. It was out of bounds at the one, no chance for a bounce into the end zone. You know, no chance for a return, great hang time. And it set up a safety. But after that, his punting was inconsistent at best. I know he dropped three inside the 20, but when you're punting, you know, from the 50, you know, from the between the 45 yard lines, you know, to me, a good punt is inside the 15 or inside the 10. You know, that 20 yard line, if you put it out at the 14, you know, at the 18 or 19 or 20 yard line, it doesn't really do much for you. But, you know, he's shown the ability to do it. He's just got to be more consistent. A kick return, Devontae Williams had, I believe, four returns for 90 yards, which is okay, you know, as long as 26. But they need to get something going there. To me, it's, you know, you see him hesitate and then dance a little bit coming out. To me, you got to hit holes and hit them quickly and explode through them. I think eventually we might see Cole Guest back there. Guest showed a lot of burst, and he's a guy who could get through the trash, as Wilson calls it. Break some arm tackles and really burst through the hole. So, you know, that's an area where I don't think their kickoffs had no touchbacks. You know, they had they're counting the safety punt, a free kick as a kickoff as well. So they have four opportunities for a return to get the ball out and help this IU offense. And, you know, they couldn't really do it. So that to me is an area that we'll keep an eye on. It's been an area of concern for a number of years now, since they moved Tevin and Stephen Houston graduated from that kickoff return team. So, you know, we'll see where they go. Overall, it was a very good win. IU should be proud of this win. It was a game that the coaching staff was worried about, against a tricky team down at their place in the heat. The weather was okay. It was a little windy, but to come away with a win like that, to show that your defense is improved and to, you know, now take it to the next game is going to be huge. Because if you could get through this non-conference schedule, and Wake Forest and Ball State are not world beaters. You texted me last night that Wake won 7-3 against Tulane. So it's not like they're going up against the Colts and the Houston Texans the next 2 weeks. Wake Forest and Ball State are manageable opponents, and you know they should get out of this non-conference 3-0. An update on Jordan Fuchs, TJ, Wilson said after the game he had a dislocated ankle. It may require surgery. I guess, you know, when you pop it back in, I don't know if you pop ankles back in, but whatever you do, whatever gross thing you do to fix it, you'll see if ligaments have torn and if he needs surgery. The good news is he does have a redshirt year. This happened in the first quarter of the first game this year, so he's eligible for that. If they have to redshirt him, they will. I think – I don't know the timeline for dislocated ankles, but I would figure it would be somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks, if not longer. So, you know, if you're not only going to have him for 3 or 4 games at the end of the year, might as well use that redshirt and save him for next year and really build –
you know, have a guy ready to take over for Danny Friend in the next couple of years. And
something we saw with that, and I don't know if this, I think it was probably planned before Fuchs' injury, but we saw that Brandon Knight lined up at tight end on more than one occasion while Coy Kronk took left tackle. Those two both played some left tackle last night. Coy Kronk got the, I would say, the majority of the snaps at that position, did very well. They're, you know, we've mentioned, I mean, they're very high on him. And it was obvious why last night. But in Brandon Knight, we saw last year, he played some tight end. That was his introduction to the roster as an extra blocker. And we saw more of that last night. It didn't occur very often, but it did occur some. And I think that that might be something they look at with Jordan Fuchs now being out. It increases the role for Ian Thomas. It increases the role for Austin Doris, who, you know, I know would love to have that huge club he has on one of his arms off, help him catch the ball. But for now, I think you might see a little bit more Brandon Knight at tight end. But it's too bad for Fuchs, and we'll talk more about that in the Ball State preview. I want to spend a couple of minutes before we wrap up on kind of some defensive superlatives. I look back at the 13 points is the fewest that IU has surrendered to an FBS opponent because they had Indiana State to 10, but Indiana State, we're not going to count it. We'll say an FBS opponent. The last time they held somebody to 13 was a 13-7 loss to Penn State in November of 2014. The 331 yards that IU held FIU to, again, against FBS opponents, that is the lowest since that same game. They held Penn State to 330. It's the second lowest total since they hammered UMass back in September of 2012, the game that Trey Roberson, Indiana killed him, but Trey Roberson suffered a broken leg in that game. I think that was UMass's first FBS home game, so this is an established FBS program that Indiana held to, you know, the fewest yards in at least the Kevin Wilson era. If you want to talk about established FBS programs, and it was Tom Allen's first game at D coordinator. You know, it's one game. We're not gonna jump ahead and proclaim that, you know, it's gonna be a, you know, top five defense in the Big Ten. But there's really no doubt to me the talent level is higher on the defense than it has been. I think that the personnel fits this system very well, and it's clear that they, number one, Tom Allen has these guys playing very, very hard. You saw it on multiple examples. Guys would not necessarily miss tackles, but a guy would get by them. There were a couple where they missed tackles. I remember two distinctly. A'shaun Riggins missed on a tackle, or missed on an assignment or something, and a play went to the other side of the field. He tracked the play down all the way across the field, still made the play. Another was T'Grae Scales missed on a screen pass where he could have held the guy to like a yard or two. He missed on it, fell, trying to make the play, got back up, tackled the guy from behind after only a 7 or 8 yard gain. He was frustrated to give up the 7 or 8 yard gain, shaking his head, you know, clapping his hands a little bit, but he still was able to fight back in and, you know, get up back up and make a play. And we saw a number of those examples last night. They played really hard. They were very physical. And, you know, they forced those takeaways, which you're not going to see Indiana score. You know, you might not see Indiana score 16 defensive points the rest of the season. It's very unexpected. It's rare. Very welcome, but, you know, I don't know, they can do it every game if they'd like to. I'd love to see it, but I think what you will continue to see is Indiana's defense making plays. It's what they teach, it's what they practice, and they're very good at teaching and practicing it, and it's clear that Tom Allen has gotten through to these guys. They trust the system, they believe in this system, and they very clearly believe that they are capable of being a good defense. Now, whether they end up being good or just, you know, better than terrible, we're going to find out. I I mean, I'm trying not to get sucked in, but it's really hard to not be very, very encouraged and excited about what this defense could become. You get Ralph Green back. You get Chase Dutra back. You add him into a very young and improving core. I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism. Certainly, you have to be guarded a little bit. You can't get crazy. But there's reasons to think that this could be a solid defense for Indiana. And that's really scary to think about if you're Indiana's opponents, because you've got quite a team to deal with and a real pest if Indiana has a solid defense to go with this offense.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's, one, it's FIU. This is a team that, isn't a national powerhouse in offense. They weren't great last year, but they were expected to have a very good offense this year. They were expected to break the 400 yard per game mark this year for the first time in program history. They had Jonnu Smith, who's an NFL player. They had a couple other guys who were good. They shut down Thomas Owens, overall I thought it was a great Indiana win. To go down to Miami, come out with a win like that is impressive. We'll see what they do next week. The next game is Saturday, September 10th at against Ball State at Memorial Stadium. It's the home opener. We'll see you at Memorial Stadium. We'll be there. The game's at 4 o'clock. Originally, it was slated at noon, but it is at it is scheduled for 4 o'clock now, so do mark that in your calendars.
Did they move that game because the ESPN News picked it up? Is that why it was moved time slots?
No, it was always on ESPN News, but they just flipped it with with the Minnesota game against somebody. I don't know. I forgot who they were playing, but it was
right.
Somebody. Flipped
another game on ESPN.
Clock.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I have to say one more thing, TJ. Before I know you have to go, but one more thing. A lot of fans were calling for Diamant to play last night, and I totally disagree with that. I know the offense is kind of bogged down. They had only put up 12 points, or 3 points, but if you pull Legault in that game down a score, you could potentially wreck the season for him. His confidence is going to be shot and all that stuff. And to be honest, FIU was getting pressure on, they were getting pressure on Legault and
a little bit.
Who knows how Xander handles that or whatever. Do I think Xander's going to play in a role in the red zone? Sure. Yes. I think that's a place where he could help, but replacing Legault, he wasn't playing poorly. He made one or two bad throws, which he shouldn't have made. There was one on an out route, which could have been a pick six, but overall, I thought he played a very fine game, and you can't take you couldn't take that kid out of the game there. Game, you got to give him a shot.
Yeah, I understand that. I sent you a text message wondering, does Wilson give Diamant a series here to maybe change of pace or give a spark or whatever you want to say. And I'm glad that they stayed with Legault for the reasons you just mentioned. But, if it's a scenario where maybe you're still down a point and the offense wasn't moving the ball in that fourth quarter, maybe that first drive, they don't do anything in the fourth quarter, so they give the ball back to FIU down a point, maybe you start to think about it. But I'm glad that they stayed the course, and obviously the results speak for themselves. It turned around very quickly. Indiana was only down 13-12 for a matter of a couple minutes, and the offense got them back out there and had a very nice drive. So that was good. I'm interested to see what number one Indiana does against Ball State. We'll preview that on, I don't know, Wednesday or something, whatever day we do the preview pod, and all week on the site. But I'm also interested to see what FIU does against Maryland next Saturday, because they host the Terrapins. Obviously, that'll be a common opponent, and you can't go like for like, but teams are different every week. But it will be interesting to see, like you said, Thomas Owens, one catch. I mean, they totally shut him down. And Magoo, Indiana had him rattled. He was really moving around the pocket. He took some big hits. Indiana got a lot of good pressure, which I was very surprised by. It was a stellar performance from the defensive line and the running game. I mean, FIU tried a couple of times, but really never got anything going on the ground, which is not a big surprise.
They had 63 net yards, and that was including that 23-yard run from Alex Gardner, or 27-yard run from Tony Gator on the option pitch. You take that one play out, and, man, they shut that run game down. 21 carries, 3 yards a carry, and that was a big concern. And so it looks like the scheme is not, you know, allows these guys to play freely. It doesn't look like they're thinking too much, and it was really good. TJ, I know you have to run. We'll be back Wednesday with our pregame show on Ball State. For those of you who are want to watch the Ball State game, they play against Georgia State tonight on ESPN3. Yep, they play
last
on.
Year, so.
It'll be a good test for them down in the Georgia Dome at I believe the game's at 7 o'clock. So you know, I'll have that game on the TV or iPad tonight, and enjoy the weekend of college football. And our wrap and reaction is now posted, and we'll have more coverage of the FIU-IU game this weekend, and then head starting on Ball State on Monday. TJ, thanks for joining.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great to be on. Always really, really fun podcast right after a win. So great start to the season. It's, you know, it's a long season, but it's one win is, you know, you can't get two before you get to one. So the goal, I think you're kind of taking this in sort of 2 week spurts right now. First kind of segment is take care of business, FIU and Ball State. Then you get your bye week, kind of regroup and figure out what's working really well and what needs tweaked. And then take on Wake Forest, and then that, you know, get into the Big Ten. So first part of that, mission accomplished. Got a road win, which is never an easy proposition. I'm very pleased with the way things began and very excited for tomorrow's games to give us the first full day of college football, but mainly really excited for Indiana to get back on the field this week in practice, and then for us to see what looks different next week. And I'd love to just beat Chirpy to sleep, because we've had enough of losing to those guys when we played them. I'm tired of that.
Yeah, IU has lost the last three in the series, so it's about time they come back and they owe Ball State a beating. So we'll be covering that. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com. Check us out on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. We'll try to interact with you as much as possible, and we do apologize if the live tweeting was off last night. Just, you know, I was down on the sideline. There was no, I didn't have Wi-Fi. I had no computer up in the press box that I could see more than half the field, but I think we got through it. But, you know, keep tweeting us. Let us know what you think, and enjoy the weekend, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.